these people are now, they're not just doing it for fun. They actually love your product, they love your brand, otherwise they won't be spending time there. They become advocates to promote your brand. They then go to your boss and say, hey, I'm using this product to do a better job. And so we're getting more value out of this platform. But guess what? They're also telling that to their peers in the community. You start to connect these stars together.
First, thank you for coming and listening to the RH Podcast. We talk about business, we talk about software, we talk about technology. One last thing, if you can share this podcast with anyone you know on Facebook, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on Twitter, it really helps bring people to the podcast. We don't make any money from this, so if you can do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. Now, let's move on and listen to our next guest. Hey, Danny, how are you doing?
Good. Pleasure to see you again, Ethan.
It's good to see you again. How's things been going? Where are you based out of, by the way?
So I'm in Northern California, in the suburbs of Sacramento, kind of halfway between Lake Tahoe and Silicon Valley.
Nice. It's a nice place to be.
And right now we're getting some of the best weather we have during the years right now.
Yeah, it's lucky. That's really lucky. Okay, first and foremost, thank you for coming. This is Danny Weinstein. Currently, he is a director at SAP, a very large company. If you don't know, you should know. And right there, he is the director of community strategy. And he's going to be talking to us not only about what he does and sort of how he contributes to his company, but some of his ideas and philosophies on getting things done and being productive in what I would call, I suppose, this newer world, and sort of and a little bit about the tech ecosystem as well. So thank you so much for coming in and sharing all these things with us and being here, taking your time.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. Yeah, so Donnie Weinstein here. It's actually spelled Danny, pronounced Donnie. I've been in the community world now going on, well, quite a number of years, going back to 2008. I appreciate the invite for today's discussion. Yes. And so, you know, I think we've really, it's an open agenda as far as what you want to cover. I'm happy to talk about my journey, about how community plays a role in business, you know, kind of what we're trying to do at SAP. But really, you know, I'd love to hear from you as far as, you know, which direction you want me to start with.
Well, I think I'll start with a simple thing, which is, what is a director of community strategy? What does that mean in an organization?
Sure. So in the SAP world, SAP's, you know, global conglomerate, very large company, just had its 50th anniversary going on 51 years.
Congratulations.
Roots in Germany. Really been, you know, they have a footprint everywhere. They operate in 140 countries, 110,000 employees. And really, we are what I would call, you know, the IT brand that most people are not very familiar with. We actually touch 77% of every transaction in every vertical in the world. So when you come into a large organization, a large account, and they have on the back end, Oracle and Salesforce and Cisco, many times a lot of those systems are hard to rip out. And we're the only solution out there really that actually allows many of these systems to stay in play and connect them together, plus add onto our own. But we operate in a lot of different verticals, everything from, you know, supply chain to human capital management to ERP. And so for me, you know, my expertise has really been developed the last 15, 16 years in, you know, community leadership. So I was on the ground floor of the consumer support forums at HP. I've spent many years in HP consumer support business. So really that was the organization when you had a printer or a PC or a consumer-based product or home office product, and you're looking for support, you're either calling us, emailing us, chatting with us, or going to our website. I pretty much played a role in many of those different touch points throughout my career there. And the latter part of my years there, we created a brand new social care team. And so the objective really was to create peer-to-peer communities or forums where customers could ask questions, get answers, and connect with their peers to share best practices.
How long ago was this when you started this?
This was back in 2008. So between 2008 and 2014, I was on the original three-person team. We launched and scaled seven language communities. So English, French, German, Spanish, Portuguese, Simplified Chinese, and Korean. Again, global footprint. And the intent really was to, the orientation was to deflect calls coming to the call center and have questions answered in our community. Mm-hmm. But more than that, we created an ecosystem where people could actually find it as a trusted source of information. You would Google your question, you would ultimately get into the community. And then with that, we also created a superfan program where we were able to curate and build up and promote and recognize our top contributors in the world. And we had a couple of very successful social support summits where we flew in our top 200-300 people from around the world to San Francisco one year, Orlando the next, and recognized them for their contribution to the community. But that whole period allowed me to really learn the basics around managing community and how does it influence the brand and how does it benefit your customer base. And so from there, I went out to two unicorns, Domo, pre-IPO, in the data analytics space. I built up their community from the ground floor, their superfan program, their advocacy program. Went to the IPO, had great success with Domo. And then from there, I went over to Kaltura, another unicorn, pre-IPO, and started the journey there. And so I joined SAP about 9 months ago, a little more than nine months ago in August of 22, and was hired as their director of community. Now, SAP, again, has got a long history of community. Their online community, community.sap.com, was created 20 years ago. So we're now celebrating their 20th anniversary. It still has a huge presence in the ecosystem. So there's more than 3 million unique visitors coming to that community every month. It's the most impactful property in the SAP.com digital ecosystem. And so my role really is to help drive the vision for how do we elevate the experience to the next level.
All right.
Working with the organization, with the digital marketing team, with the owners of different elements across learning and support to create a better, more personalized experience for our customers. And so, you know, my role really is to learn and understand the workings, the operation, you know, what are the business drivers. And so where community sits today within SAP, we are part of SAP Learning. And especially in the B2B world, the number one reason why you may ask, well, why do, you know, professionals spend time in community answering questions? Or why should I go there? I'm an IT professional. I'm busy. I got to deploy, you know, Domo or Kaltura or SAP. I don't have time to hang out in a community. The reality is the number one driver for those professionals is they want to gain knowledge. They want to get better at their job. They want to get better at their A game using our products. And one way to do that is to collaborate with their peers. So if I'm a finance manager, let's say at Deutsche Bank, and I'm managing SAP, an instance of SAP, well, I want to connect with my peer at Credit Suisse, or someone who's in the same role at another company who's also using the same software, and say, hey, what are your best practices on deploying this? How are you optimizing your investment in the software? It's really that trusted peer experience. And so in order to do that, you have to create a community. And so the community can exist in our online assets, but it also exists in, you know, other places. People have conversations on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on YouTube, GitHub. But also there are in-person meetups. And so there's a vast ecosystem as well of SAP user groups in the Americas, in Europe, in Asia. And so connecting in person is also incredibly important. That's part of the overall ecosystem. But right now, my immediate focus is on how do we enable, and our bigger goals are, our goal right now within learning, you know, we see community as the enabler for learning. We're trying to grow the population of SAP professionals by 2 million people in 2025. And so in order to do that, we've got a great learning ecosystem.
How many are you now? You said 3 million, right?
Well, the goal is to achieve, you know, 2 million. We want to have in 2025, we want to have 2 million people actually go through a skilled learning course. So successfully complete.
How many do you have now?
At the current moment, we're focused on driving traffic. So right now, we're expected to have 1.4 million active learners in our SAP learning ecosystem in 23.
Right.
The goal really is to shift from traffic to actually course completion at a much larger number in 2025. So we see community as the on-ramp, the enabler, driving awareness for learning journey. And it's tied very much into people are trying to gain knowledge, they're trying to get better at their job, they're trying to get certifications. And so as a director of strategy, I'm helping to drive that vision, helping to drive, you know, figure out what's most important for us to invest or spend our time on. What are things that can wait? And right now, there are a lot of things that have evolved over the years, and we have an opportunity to I think, improve the digital experience. Many people that come to the community today are doing so through a Google search, and then they're either finding the answer they're looking for or they're asking a question. But we don't really offer today what I would consider a world-class experience where, for example, you know, you come into our community and I know that Hitu has been an SAP customer for 5 years, you've been using these products, and offer more of a personalized experience. So, I mean, Amazon does a great job of this. That's kind of, you know, North Star where we're trying to go several years down the road. We should be able to know once you sign in, I'm new to SAP, I've been with SAP for X number of years, I have these products, or you know what, I'm a veteran, I've been around for 20 years, I've been using all these different portfolios. But with all that data, you can then serve up more personalized content. You can say, oh, you know what, other people like you who have been with us for 3 years, who've gone through this course, have also benefited from taking, you know, using this platform or taking the certification. And again, that's what people want. People want direction. You know, how do I, they're looking for us for advice on, well, how do I get better at my SAP game. You know, they're not going to have that knowledge. They're coming to us for that knowledge. And so with connecting those systems, that's what we're working on for 24 and 25, is getting to a much more personalized experience instead of just a generic, you know, cookie cutter. I've got to search, I've got to find the content and then figure out what's going to work. Getting to a much more personalized experience, that makes it a,
you're right,
not just beneficial, but also makes it a
more optimized.
More optimized.
Right. And more fun. A quick question on, so if we go back to the, like the very beginning, right? So it's 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And you were getting into that space and trying to get a grasp on, I think at that time, I'm sure there were online communities at that time, there's an understanding of online communities. Whether or not those online communities and big business were connected in any way, or there was an understanding of the value within the, I'm not sure. Is that true at that time? Now it's very obvious, right? Almost all companies are essentially communities of one form or another to some degree. And actually, the most famous ones are basically very, very large communities, right? So
sure.
The idea of that value add, how was it perceived in 2008?
Sure. So at that time, you know, we had a really strong support organization, particularly in the Americas. So again, we had, you know, support probably several dozen languages in email and chat and web and phone support. And in the Americas, we won a JD Power Award for best in class support in 2006. In 2007, they did not renew the award because we were missing a branded, an HP owned forum. They didn't call it community for support. We had one with the Compaq acquisition. They ended up sunsetting it. And there were a number of legacy communities or forums that HP IT had built back in the 90s that were serving large enterprise. So people that had servers and storage and high capacity systems like that, and really much very highly technical, very much for the IT professional. So the business case was, we didn't get the JD Power Award, we need to go create this forum.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, the two big heavy hitters in enterprise community software were Lithium and Jive.
Mm-hmm.
Now again, there were communities like Sony and others that had large branded communities that were out there, but certainly it didn't have what is, you know, today. Today, it's really a business requirement. At that time, I was less so. But the big benefit at the time, the sales case was, well, how much is this award worth to the HP brand? How much more is it worth to the organization? And how much is it going to benefit our portfolio? And so for the business case really was centered on, we knew our web traffic. We did estimates of how much traffic we were going to get in the community and how many questions would potentially be answered in the community. And if they're not getting answered in the community, guess what? They're not going to be calling us as much. They're not going to be emailing us as much. And all those things are operation that cost money. So over time, we could actually show substantial savings in tens of millions of dollars. It took several years to get there in support savings by having our customers discuss the same questions. Because again, many people have the same questions coming in over and over again.
Yeah,
finding the information in the community. So that was the big anchor. But now over time, there really are four, and it's not limited to four, but there's really four major business value pillars in a B2B world. Now, the quick wins in many cases are going to be around support. I find the information I'm looking for. I've got a question. I'm not going to call you for support. And those can be achieved relatively quickly. The second one is content creation. If you think about, I've got to create a knowledge base. I've got to create a library of articles. I've got to, you know, I know that, okay, we have a new product release. People are going to have 10 typical questions on these products. Well, someone's got to go create those articles. You've got to go create the content. You've got to go publish it. That costs time and money and resources. In community, those same types of questions and answers are going to come about. And what happens is you've got the capability where you ask a question, I answer it. You have the ability to market, oh, that's the right answer. It's now an accepted solution. And we verify it. So once that's the case, that can actually easily be converted to a knowledge-based article. So each of those articles becomes valuable pieces of content. And what's now happened is the community is becoming a farm to create this great content that can be harvested. So now you're actually driving efficiencies on content creation. And that can be used in, you know, case studies. It can be used in your knowledge base. It can be used in many different places. So you're now saving money in content creation. The next one is around, how do you gamify your community to, because again, most people are like, everyone's busy. I'm going to Google, I'm on my phone, I'm going to search my question, I'm going to find my answer, I'm going to move on. So they're what I would call consumers of the content, but they're not going to engage. That's about 90%, or it could be as much as 90% of the population. And so with that, it's incredibly important that those eyes continue to be coming on the community. But then there's a population that is going to engage. They're going to like a comment. They're going to add a comment and ask a question. And they may occasionally answer questions as well. And though that represents anywhere from, you know, it's a minimum 10%. It could be as high as 30%. There's a small population that I would call are really the gold in the community. And these are your super fans or superstars. And these are the people that are most motivated to be contributing in the community because they want the recognition they want to be recognized as an expert. So they've got a lot of knowledge about your brand, your product, whatever it may be. And they want to be showing up on the leaderboards. So when you gamify your experience, and again, most of the top platforms have this built in, you can see that I'm the most liked author. I have the most solutions. I'm the star of the month. They value that. But then as you start to move up the rank ladder and you become a superstar, then you're getting a certification in a sense that from the brand, oh, this person is actually really knowledgeable about this platform. And then they can use that. That person is motivated by the recognition because they use that to go to their boss and say, hey, I've been now a star in this community for 6 months, nine, whatever it may be, or I received this cool award. They use that to demonstrate some, you know, sort of a neutral opinion from the company that, hey, this person is actually an expert.
Right.
And so they become the most valuable people in the community because guess what? They're actually answering as much as 50% of the questions in the community are being answered by these folks. So that's actually driving a lot of efficiencies. But also, guess what happens? As you start to recognize them and you get more data around them, you realize these people are now, they're not just doing it for fun. They actually love your product. They love your brand. Otherwise, they won't be spending time there. They become advocates to promote your brand. They then go to your boss and say, hey, I'm using this product to do a better job. And so we're getting more value out of this platform. But guess what? They're also telling that to their peers in the community. You start to connect these stars together. And so if I'm at Citibank and I'm now hanging out with my buddy at Credit Suisse, and I'm sharing the love about how much this is a cool experience, well, guess what? That's influencing them as well. So this becomes then impactful to, especially in the world of B2B and SaaS or software as a solution where renewals are incredibly important when everything's in the cloud. There's a lot of data that shows if you've got these active members in community or even active learners, because learning is also just as impactful in a specific account, and you compare that to accounts that have no presence in community, no presence in learning, You're going to have a higher probability of upsells and retention in those accounts that have actually people engaged in your conversations and community versus those that do not. That becomes a big value add, and it could be substantially larger than even the support savings and even the content creation. So that takes time. It takes several years to develop that, but that's actually a highly valuable element of.
It takes several years to get that return on building that community.
If you're building a community from scratch, it takes a couple. It's usually you're not seeing that impact until years two and three, because again, it takes time to cultivate those regards in the community. If you've got a legacy community, kind of know who they are, it's probably a shorter time to value.
Yeah, if you have a pre-existing pool you can pull from, then of course it's fine. I'm sure there isn't a particular number, but probably is there a ratio of number of customers to number of people in the community where you start seeing a deceleration in the number of calls per day for your product? So let's say you have 2 million customers, you need 500,000 customers before the number of calls you have on your call center goes from 50,000 to 40,000. So this is arbitrary. It has no really, you know, but
sure.
That's sort of how I'm thinking about it. And it takes 2 years to build that, right? Or a year to build that. But you'll see it. And it's obviously, once it starts to roll, fast, but you have to have that patience.
Right. Okay, careful. We're talking about several different things here. So the deflection piece is a little bit of a different animal because, again, not necessarily all of your customers have access to support, but they do have access to community.
Right.
And there may be other people in the account that do have access to it. Sometimes they're supporting the same people. So it's sometimes harder to measure that. The simple way to do it is really look at, you can do short surveys on your website or on your community that says, hey, you know, was your visit today successful? Or did you find the information you were looking for? And then you follow it up with, you know, do you intend to contact support? So there's a measurable way to track the deflection. And then you look at your overall number of unique visitors and you multiply by that ratio of, okay, the number of people coming to our community. 60%, 70% of the people visiting now are finding what they're looking for. That's a great number usually. You can derive deflection numbers from that. As far as, you know, the spread, really, it's about promoting the value community, making the experience easy, making sure that your content has got optimized SEO, all of the above. I think once you are reaching those levels and you start promoting it in every account, the deflection piece will kind of take care of itself. The second one around the advocacy is a bit more challenging. That one takes several years to reach because, again, you have to put programs in place, you got to have recognition, you have to have milestones. And reaching those different levels in community doesn't happen from one day one to the next.
Is there a way for, because here you're talking about measuring outcomes based on the community surveys themselves. Is there a location that's reflective of the outcomes? Like I was just using Call Center as an example, but you measure here and there's an outcome, and you measure here, there's an outcome, and you measure how this affects that. Is there an equivalent with this where that you see, okay, fine, the people who are in here are doing okay, but it has a measurable outcome on company goals, on KPIs, in a different area?
Yes, but it's very challenging to do that. What you can do is look at, you start measuring the people that are, one of the ways to certainly address that is, you know, who are your heavy hitters in your contact centers? Who's creating the most support tickets? And making sure that they're aware of community and really helping to move them from the call center to, you know, to community. That's sort of one element to sort of mitigate that. Second is also to find out, particularly, you want to try and promote the community so that that's actually the first stop along the way before they actually open up a support case.
Right.
And there's ways to do that as well, where before a customer is actually able to create the case, they're going through a series of questions of, have you looked at this article? Have you searched your community? And maybe I've seen some cases where you're actually forced to do that before you're actually allowed to open up a support case.
Right.
But again, it depends on the policy of the particular company and how open your support ticketing system is. Because in many cases, it's fairly restrictive and it may be limited to, especially large companies, to a more senior, you know, IT professional. And so what happens is those professionals that, let's say, they're at a Credit Suisse, they have a whole team of people underneath them who potentially are coming to them for help. You want to make sure that those folks in particular are aware of the value of the community so they can direct the people under them to use that first, because then they're going to get less of a need to open up a case. So I see where you're going. And again, it's certainly doable, but it's quite challenging to get to that level of sophistication.
So in my mind, if you have that level of, because it does multiple things, right? It's also kind of documentation for people internally. Mm-hmm. Because you could get to a situation where you have experts outside the organization that have spent so much time or so invested in the product that there are people in the organization that simply aren't as much for one reason or another, who knows, right, in the call centers. Or maybe they've moved on into different areas within the organization where I'm taking their knowledge with them. Mm-hmm. But the people who are outside, they're so invested in this for one reason or another, and they stay for a long time. And so the amount of people who have expertise increase relative to the size of the community, more than you could hire, you would need to hire, you have the ability to hire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have that documentation piece, and you also have sort of the expertise piece, and then the redirection piece, that you should be able to say, okay, if everyone at that lower level of this, of our support, mm-hmm. is able to direct people to this, then the number of calls we make, or the number of calls that are made to us, so an individual, have reduced by X amount. It might not be the predictability of it may not be there, but it should be maybe in a 5-year or 4-year period an outcome where that's objectively true relative to maybe relative to the growth of the company, and then what the expectation was if this wasn't there, and then essentially the graph should come down where, you know, sort of it should be a little less, and then that gap is where your value is, or where the value has been created. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And you typically do see that as you see the number of registered members and communities grows, the traffic grows, the number of solutions that are created, the time to answer in community. you typically will see a direct correlation to what the increase in support may have been.
Yeah.
And it has been. I mean, Richard Millington's done a great job. He's one of the leading consultants out there. He runs a company called Feverbee in the UK. And he actually worked with a company several years back where they shut off a particular algorithm to the community for a period of time. They actually did a test to see what would be the impact on their contact center. And it was pretty dramatic. So now, I was just going to say, you have the deflection, you've got the content creation, you have the advocacy piece. And the last one is around voice of customer. So this is around ideation. In many cases in the B2B world, you know, again, there's really three flavors of conversations. There are, I'm searching for an answer to either fix something or to figure something out. It's a Q&A. You have a question, I have an answer. It's very specific. The second one is my best practice discussions. It's like, I don't have a question. I figured out something really cool. There's like a new release of the platform. I went through all the release notes, but now I figured out something that's not documented and I want to share that with my peers. So I start this conversation about optimizing the value of this latest release. That's sort of a secondary discussion. The third one is, I'm trying to figure something out, and the answer is, oh, we can't do that today. Go submit a feature request. It's about product feedback. And so there's many different ways you can skin the cat on how to do product feedback. And one way is to actually do an ideas exchange where you can have voting, you crowdsource the voices of your customers around a particular idea, and you actually have engineering as part of that conversation. And that one too, when it's done right, can add quite a bit of value to the brand. But it's also a very tricky thing to navigate, because you don't want it to become an echo chamber where there's no one responding. And also, you need to make sure you do it in a way where not everybody gets a chance to have a vote. Meaning, you want to gamify it so that customers who actually have shown value in the community, they're at like level 5 or 6 or 7, they've now earned the right to, you know, create an idea, vote an idea, so that it's not sort of, that they're not gaming the system around voting, and also that the quality of the contribution to that idea has already been demonstrated by that person's previous contribution in the community.
So let's talk about that game, because I'm interested in that. First of all, the gamification piece. The other piece is the sustainability. And then also the controlling of perception a little bit. So I think you sort of alluded to it with making sure that people who have some semblance of qualification, which is also part of, it's also difficult to determine, and also a bit of a gamification derivative, right? Where rewards are given for positive outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gamification also touches on sustainability a little bit, because obviously with rewards, people want to stay, but also making sure those rewards actually result in outcomes that encourage you to stay, right? Because all games get boring after a while. If you win the game too many times, or so there's a nuance there where it's kind of like, is it a game? Is it an objective reward system? And the other part, obviously, is controlling perception, where, you know, if people have, at the end of the day, if people have the freedom to continue to contribute, they also have the freedom to say things that you may or may not want them to say. So there's a bit of a management there.
Sure.
You know, in a way, it's also good, because if they're saying it within the context that you can contribute to almost immediately, or you can sort of come back to almost immediately and say, hey, look, we can solve this problem. We do want this feature for you. So those three pieces, I think, are interesting, because it's a very soft thing to have to deal with.
Right. And again, you want to have an open community. It's welcome to everybody. The first few levels are typically about the quantity of your participation. You know, I'm signing in, I'm making a comment, I'm liking something, answering questions. But really, to get to, let's say, those quality levels, you have to start providing value, meaning people are liking what you have to say, or you're actually providing good answers. You know, you're actually an author of an accepted solution, because then you're demonstrating knowledge. And once you have, it filters out a lot of the noise. And again, people want to see their movement up the ladder. They want to get badges for reaching certain levels. And with that, the community is not about having, okay, everybody has the same opinion. No, you want to have people that are going to be critical of what we're doing or what's happening within the platform, but it needs to be done in a respectful and professional manner. So there are rules of God, you know, there are rules of participation and security and privacy guidelines. And so we're not, you know, people, most companies are not going to tolerate foul language or people abusing it or people harassing anybody else. But it doesn't mean that they can't say, well, you know what, this release actually was terrible. I'm having a hard time with it, and I think you should have done it this way. That fosters actually, you know, having, you know, healthy dialogue and critique, I think is welcoming. And that's the way it should be. Now, to your point about sustainability, as they reach these highest levels, you then need to recognize those folks as your MVPs. And so you have, you know, annual awards at your conference around, you know, your customer champions. It could be at regional events. You want to start inviting those people for presenting at user groups or even on a podcast, or even you start showcasing them. I mean, right. Salesforce does a great job of this. They have today, Benioff has his people in, you know, at Dreamforce. And he's issuing the golden hoodie, you know, at Dreamforce and on video in front of thousands of people around the world. You know, that's kind of the epitome of that kind of program. And again, there's only 300 Salesforce MVPs around the world, yet there are probably tens of thousands of people that are striving to get to that level. Now, not everybody's going to get to that level. But if you think about hiking the highest mountains in the world, like Kilimanjaro, you know what? Some people are satisfied with getting to base camp one, and others are going to be satisfied with getting base camp two. Oh, that was my objective. I mean, and that's okay. And you have to have recognition milestones for reaching those important levels. Of course, you've got, you know, the top of the mountain, but it also needs to be made clear that, you know, you're not an MVP for life. There is a renewal process. It doesn't mean, okay, I did it for 2 years, I kicked butt on it, and now I'm done. Well, if you disappear for another year, it's like anything else. You're not going to be a frequent flyer on, you know, United or Delta at that level forever. You know, it's sort of, well, we missed you. Sorry, you know, you have to start over again. Or maybe they give you, you know, another year. They'll grandfather you in for a year. But point is that it does require a sustained level of, you know, engagement.
There's effort.
Many ways to recognize these folks, again, through giving them discounts and certification. If they're coming to your annual conference, you get the front row seating. You know, again, if there's a corporate, having your top MVPs on stage with the CEO, even for 60 seconds, saying, hey, these people are rock stars. We appreciate you. It could be a, you know, guest blogging on a corporate blog, you know, and even giving the ability to run their own, and some of them are passionate about running events. So they say, you know what, we're going to trust you to, you know, you're based in Chicago. We're going to give you a budget, you know, for, you know, order pizza, wine, and beer. Go at it. Because we know that they know their stuff, and we're saying, you know what, if you want someone from our company to show up, take notes, be there to support you, we're happy to help out. You want to run on your own, that's fine. But that's how you scale. You know, that's how you scale, answer questions. That's how you scale. I mean, you have to leverage the power of your community to do that.
Is there a personality profile for people who do these? Are there all kinds, I guess, all kinds of people? Like, is there, you know, who really gets to the top of these sort of communities and end up in these sort of locations?
Again, I think in the B2B world, you know, the common thread why people are coming first place is to get better at their job. But as far as the, you know, the MVP personnel, people come from all walks of life. I mean, even if I go back to my HP days, which was more, again, in the consumer world, the persona of our stars that we invited, that we flew out to our social summit, it wasn't the people, your typical persona who worked at Geek Squad at Best Buy. I mean, we had the top, for example, you know, Cheryl, God bless her. I mean, she was the top contributor for answering desktop PC questions in the world. This is a 64-year-old grandmother who had a full-time day job. She spent 30 hours a week answering questions in the community. We had another guy who was, you know, a corporate attorney.
Was she related to that in any way, or was her job related to, you know, sort of like, she just did this?
She had a passion for, she did a passion for, so that was her. We had another guy, Erico, retired military, he was in the Coast Guard. He was living in the Netherlands, and he had, you know, 6, 7 HP devices. He was hanging out in his basement. He was a night owl, and he was answering questions all night. We had a 20-year-old kid in Poland who was Microsoft MVP, was also doing HP stuff. You know, we had a guy who was, you know, a corporate attorney daytime, and he was doing, you know, notebook questions at night. So, you know, all walks of life. Of course, you had some hard HP people who had knowledge, but again, it ran the full gamut of personas. It was just, it's like anything else. You got a hobby, whether it be around cars or cooking or travel, that you're really passionate about. That's what they want to talk about. That's where their mindset was. So in the case of going back to, you know, full circle to B2B, it's more so those people that they're doing it as very much as part of their job. So there's very much a correlation there. But they're also motivated by the recognition factor. They want that external recognition to get promoted. And so that's, I think, the biggest driver. And that common theme for getting to, you know, they want access to executives. We have sort of that today with our Mentors and Champions program at SAP, where the mentors actually have direct access to some of our top executives. And they've had it for a very long time. It's really evolved to more of an executive advisory board, but originated within, you know, a community environment years ago. And again, all those things don't necessarily cost crazy money to implement. It's really a matter of how you manage it. But I think the common theme is it's all about the recognition of having that knowledge around our platform, and also the value that you can bring by actually getting us better ideas on how we can become better at making our product better.
So going back to this idea of doing this in multiple countries, because I was thinking, you know, I guess technology now is different then, but, you know, if someone from Japan who has a lot of contact could be providing a lot of value in Japanese, mm-hmm. but they have the best opportunity to provide that value. And if they can translate it, then that's there's a maximum opportunity there for that person, mm-hmm. vice versa, from other countries. cross-pollination across countries, having people who are very high quality or have high skill of high interest from multiple countries come together.
Sure.
And then so just sort of this like sort of global community of people for your organization that, that contribute to the community. And I think it's interesting, probably interesting for them, right? To come from doing this thing, all of a sudden they get, you know, flown out to somewhere that they've never been and never thought they would be flown out to just because they're contributing to a community, right? And having organizations support that kind of stuff.
No, and that's, we have a huge opportunity right now at SCP to do that. So I'll give you a couple examples. One is, again, the HP days, we had seven language communities. Global, you know, again, the communities were in separate URLs, but same conversation, same UI, same experience. But the summit, we actually flew in people from China and Korea and, you know, various parts of Europe, US and Canada to our summits. So they got to meet each other. And again, all walks of life, all different languages, different cultures, but one common thing, they're talking about the HP platform. You mentioned Japanese, which is quite interesting because in my Domo days, you know, Domo means thanks in Japanese. If you say thank you very much in Japanese, it's Domo arigato. And when I created the community for Domo, we ended up calling it the dojo, like a martial arts studio. And our gamification was a belt structure. So you start as a, you know, you start a white belt and you work your way all the way to a black belt. Now, we didn't have black belt at the beginning. We had up to like five levels. We had like a blue belt, was maybe five or six. And then we added more until you reached the black belt. Well,
right.
We actually had, Japan was a very important market for our CEO. And we had Japanese fully available, I think 60 days after we went live with English. Well, guess what? We had a Japanese customer who was crushing it. And when he was answering tons of questions in the Japanese community, but guess what? He was also answering questions on the English community. I'm sorry, it was in the same community, but he was actually answering questions on the English side. Now,
right.
I thought the guy was fluent in Japanese. He was using Google Translate to create content. And we ended up hiring him as a Domo employee in Japan. We already had 30 or 50 employees in Tokyo, and they ended up recruiting him because he was so good. But when he came, I got to meet him in person. I was shocked. He didn't know a word of English. And we're sitting there in the same conference room on our Mac using Google Translate to have a conversation. You know, it was with audio. It was like real early days of AI. It was about 6-7 years ago. So to your point, we are living in a global digital world, and you've got to be able to break down those barriers. And great ideas and great knowledge and superstars can come from anywhere in any walk of life. And I don't care what language they speak. The common thing goes back to, well, what's the conversation about? It's about your platform. Or if you're in a community about cars, it's about the cars. Or it's about travel. Or it's about, you know, whatever it may be, or cooking. It's all that common theme. That's where their passion is. And so you've got to take a step back and realize that that's what they are talking about. And you want to basically, our job is really about how do you lower the barriers or entry so that there's minimal friction. It's easy to find the information I'm looking for. It's easy to sign in. It's easy for me to ask a question. All of the above. And that's kind of the stuff, you know, we're working on those basics right now to improve our experience this year. And 24 and beyond, it's about the personalization stuff.
Well, one more thing before you go is, what is the technology that you're using? I'm sure it changes over time since you started, but you know, what technology, for example, the belt system, that's something you would, I'm not sure if something that existed already with a belt system, but you would have to make that from scratch. If it's a software that is custom built in the organization,
So
that's one thing. If you're bringing something in, that's another thing. So,
yeah. And again, I've worked with, I know all the top vendors. So they're, you know, again, early days of enterprise community was Jive and Lithium. Today, Lithium is a company called Koros. It was an acquisition by Vista Partners of Lithium. They also acquired Spreadfast and a few others. But the net is there's a handful of enterprise community vendors today, such as Koros, Insighted, HireLogic. You know, they acquired Vanilla, Discord, and there's a number of, you know, smaller players. But really, I would say the ones that can support the large enterprise that have localization, that have the security requirements, privacy. Are those the ones that I mentioned? Each and every one of them have a pretty robust built-in gamification platform. It's up to you how you want to, how you decide how you want to create a ladder. In fact, we're having this conversation right now internally about our SAP community because it's been around for so long and we have different things in play. So again, I wanted to do something that was in line with our cult, with the Domo culture, because we had this influence of, you know, this Japanese influence because of our CEO. And so that's why I came up with the belt structure idea. Because you can name it anything you want, and you can create the graphics for it. That's pretty straightforward as far as it deploying it in the system. the key is on the back end, you have to determine, all right, what's the requirement to reach level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Is it, you know, answering 10 questions successfully? Is it showing up, you know, every day for a month? Is it, you know, all of those things? And that's never revealed to the customer. You know, you simply communicate, it's quality over quantity, it's adding value. And so with that, as I said, most of the platforms I mentioned have the capability to, they have the built-in gamification as well as the badging system. So, you know, there are a lot of badges that are automatically awarded based on, you know, I've had my 100th post, I've received my 100th like. But then there's other ones that are custom. They're based on a certain event. Oh, I presented at a user group. I attended Dreamforce. I went to Sapphire for SAP, was a SAP mentor for the year 2023. All those things, you can actually award event-specific badges that are unique to that particular event. So it's a combination of both. And that's also part of the game. That's the currency you use. It's the ranking ladder, it's the badging, but then it's also the, you know, the quarterly, the regional, or the annual awards or events that you formally recognize those people at your event, saying, "Hey, you're awesome because of this. Thank you." And now again, it's all about they want you know, you have to share your customers some love and recognition for their knowledge, and they really that goes miles.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing with us a little bit about community and how that works in large organizations. And thanks for doing it for so long and teaching us a few things here and there. So if people want to show you some love or, find out where you are, reach out to you, ask you some questions, learn some more from you, where can they do that?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. So it's just / I believe, just my full name, so Donnie Weinstein. And if you go to Twitter, it's DannyBoys777. So DannyBoys777. Oh, that's probably the two best places to get a hold of me. LinkedIn/IN/DannyWeinstein. No spaces, no dots. And if not, then, you know, reach out to Recursive House to find me.
Thank you so much for coming out and thanks for sharing. Have a good day.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.